You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?
Vices? We don't need no vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
Not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. If you're listening to us on the go, you can catch us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere else you can grab your podcasts. As always, I'm one of your hosts. My name is Sean, and I'm not in studio. I am zooming it in with my cohort, Paul, who is in his studio. Paul, how are you today?
Don't hate the player, hate the game. I had the studio. I had to accommodate all of you guys for a long time. It is now time.
I'm not hating the player.
It is now time for me to enjoy my sweatpants and my comfortability and not have to worry about you guys.
I was about to say, you could be wearing no pants, but there's a mirror right behind you and I could see you. Thank God you are wearing pants.
They're gray sweatpants too. You're welcome, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know what that matters, but okay.
Don't worry about it.
All right, Paul. So we have hit the final 2 weeks of our Harry Potter film discussion. I mean, it's been a month and a half, basically.
I know. It's been
time flies when you're having fun.
And to all of our brand new listeners, thank you guys for joining in. I hope you guys, what a weird time to be a new listener on our show.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, hey, what are they talking about? Oh, they're on Harry Potter 7? Oh, wow.
I hope like people aren't like jumping in thinking that we're a Harry Potter podcast and they're like, oh my God, they're doing Harry Potter. Oh, there's all these other things.
I mean, come on. The podcast is called Cinematic Adventures. I mean, you can't figure it out by then, you know.
I think it's very specific. I think it's very, very well defined.
I agree.
And also very vague at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. We open ourselves up to just whatever we want to talk about, we can talk about. Hey, what do you
do? Good thing there's more than like 12 movies.
Yes, there. What I just remembered, not really news, but I just wanted to give a good shout out. Congratulations to Adam Sandler, just received the Mark Twain Prize.
Yes.
And they had the ceremony, I believe, last week. And I think it's going to be airing, if not, it already has, I think, because I know it just watched a couple clips on YouTube. So congratulations to Adam Sandler. So I got to catch that and see all these people making fun of him on stage, which would be fun to watch.
Oh my, I would watch a roast of Adam Sandler. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, it's obviously, it's a roast without being over the top ridiculous, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, but this is like a very well-respected, you know, prize. John Stewart won had last year. Andrew Louis-Dreyfus got one the year before that. So a lot of fun and congratulations to him. That's something we got to do. We got to do an Adam Sandler. I feel like we got to do Adam Sandler movies.
I would do an Adam Sandler, like even just like a look back at his career and just how weird his career's been.
Oh, that's true. It's true.
Like, talk about a guy that went from like just being the goofy man child to being a super dramatic actor at certain points and winning accolades and then being a goofy man child again just with his friends.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, he's been at least, I mean, we saw it with Punch Drunk Love. We saw it even in Click. I mean, he has a good few dramatic moments in that movie. And when you look at Uncut Gems, which is, I mean, still people are annoyed that he wasn't nominated for an Oscar for that movie. Yeah, he's really carved out a great career for himself, and he made a great deal by Netflix, man.
Oh, ooh, yeah.
He never has to work. I mean, just he can make whatever he wants. Doesn't matter.
Best Adam Sandler cameo of all time was on Brooklyn Nine-Nine of all shows.
Oh, really? Nice.
Andy Samberg's, like, his cop character is undercover at an auction, and Adam Sandler starts heckling him from the crowd. And Andy Samberg's like, Adam Sandler, what are you doing here? And he's like, yeah, I'm cultured. I go to antique shows. I'm also researching a film like where, you know, and he goes, yeah, who's Kevin James going to play? You know, he's not in all my films, but he's going to be the president of France or like something stupid. Like, it was really funny, though. Those two have a fun relationship. Andy Samberg talked about how he invited Sandler to his wedding. And he's just like, sure, I'll come. And it turned into like, I think he dressed up as his character from That's My Boy.
God.
And went to the wedding like that.
That's dedication right there. Oh my God.
That's one of those guilty pleasure movies where it's so bad, but I can definitely watch it when it's on, as long as it's not edited. It's one of those movies that's just, it takes something so much.
You have to watch it. You have to watch it full blast. No cuts.
You know, in all honesty, that movie wouldn't be so bad if he chose a better voice for the main character.
Yeah, but that's just his voice. That's him.
Like, no, there are levels of Sandler. There's too Sandy, and then there's not Sandy enough. You know what? He gets like really high like this. Like, that's all right, dude. Too much. Like, even in Billy Madison, he went up and down with his tone in that movie.
Oh, true. And he has his movies where he doesn't do that at all in any of them. And yeah, there's some where, like, Little Nicky, where the whole movie he's talking with, like, you know, the lisp.
Because he got hit in the face with a shuffle.
I used to be really handsome, and then my brother Cassius hit me in the head with a shovel.
I like at the end, they show that he got hit in the face again. He's like, I'm still no George Clooney. But anyway, can we talk about Harry Potter? Because already people are probably like, what is happening? What is the show?
All righty then, fine. For everyone out there that's upset, we are going to discuss today Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Much like the movie.
Could we have done all of them in one episode? We could have, but you know what? We need content and we got to stretch it out.
I mean, not really. There's trillions of movies. We could name a movie series right now.
Name one.
Fast and Furious. Oh, how pissed are you?
We did it.
We did one. We only did the one, and it was my greatest.
That's all we need to do.
Greatest episode title of all time. It was Cars in Space. Like Pigs in Space, but with cars.
Oh, back in the day when you used to actually title the episodes. Look at you.
You know, I still sometimes do, but then other times people don't get what I'm talking about. Our Goonies episode was lower rated because people didn't know that Hey You Guys was the Goonies.
Well, that's depressing.
It's lost in context when you read it. In my defense.
All right. Well, Paul, let me ask you a question. Can you believe it's been almost 13 years since this movie came out?
You know, it's funny. When you say things like that, I get so depressed and just really upset.
I just saw it right on your face there.
Only thing that depresses me more about that is the death of Dobby.
Really?
Oh,
that's
so
the one that depresses me the most?
It's really the only death in this film, like, or the only That's like true. Main death besides.
Well, the only death you see on film, and then no, you see Hedwig.
That's right. Very different in the book. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, and then Mad Eye Moody, but you don't see it.
Yeah, it happens off camera, off
scene. And
same in the book too.
Yeah,
because they want to go recover his body. But they're like, no, we can't do it.
All right. So let's rewind back to a simpler time, 2007, 2008, when they announced that they are going to split the final book, Deathly Hallows, into two movies. I think a collective from all the Potter fans and just movie fans in general were just like, makes sense.
Yeah.
Totally, my God.
Everybody was on board with it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you could even have argued, but I don't think they should have, but you could have argued they could have done this all the way from Goblet of Fire on. They could have split the books up into, you know, two movies to really make sure everything gets in them. But this is the first one where it's like, no, we can't cut that much out.
So yeah, it'd be way too much. Way too much. And also this film benefits from taking some stylistic choices because they have a little bit more freedom with what they include. And we'll talk about some of the things that they include that actually really work, and then some of the things that just kind of fall super flat. So incredibly super flat. But more in the second one. I have more qualms with the second one than I do with this first one, very strangely.
Yeah. No, I remember seeing the second one in theaters, and I just hear you just going like, ugh.
It's just the last 10 minutes. It's really just the last 10 minutes.
I remember that.
That just make me groan. I still have trouble watching it.
Yeah. I hear you.
But
really, as we discussed before we started recording, there's really not many new additions character cast wise in this movie. There's two, but they're very small, you know, really appearances. There's Rise Ifans as Luna Lovegood's father, very eccentric father of Luna Lovegood. And he has a very good scene with the three main characters later on in the movie. And you know, because as he ends up basically turning them in, because they've kidnapped Luna and he wants her back.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is Bill Nighy as Rufus Scrimgeour, the new minister for magic, who you pretty much see twice in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, and then he gets killed off screen.
He's also get killed off screen. So those are really the main two new additions. We do have some returning cast members that have come back from previous films, like... Why am I blanking? Emile de Staunton comes back as Dolores Umbridge. She was not in the previous movie, so she came on in this one.
Mm-hmm.
The last time we see the Dursleys, very, like, I wonder if there was more filmed. I think there was.
There's a deleted scene of him shaking Harry's hand. And because in the books, we find out that after everything happens, him and Dudley still keep in touch. And Dudley considers that he saved him from the Dementors in the previous movie. So like they're on Christmas card terms, is like almost the exact phrasing. And then also apparently like they'll still see each other and let their kids, you know, hang out while they just kind of sit there and watch very quietly.
All right.
Some people got very oddly specific endings to their stories.
Okay, fair enough. And then one other major return is John Hurt as Ollivander, the Wandmaker, who we have not seen since the first movie.
He does get kidnapped in the previous movie. That's part of the opening scene.
He's kidnapped, but you don't see him.
He's got the bag on his head.
Yeah.
Hope he's okay.
Oh, I hope so too. But other than that, everyone else is pretty much characters who we have really gone over the last couple episodes. So I thought those were the biggest ones we should mention.
Mm-hmm.
And so production-wise, the part one was filmed back-to-back with part two from February of 2009 to June of 2010.
Which is wild.
A year and a little less than a year and a half to film both movies.
That's crazy. And like the fact it used to be a little bit more I don't know. Cinema goes through weird phases where having a double type movie is like more common. Like Back to the Future did it too, where they filmed 2 and 3 almost back to back. And then
pretty much
Pirates also did it. And it's funny because I follow a YouTube channel called The Nostalgia Critic, and he just went through the Pirates movies, and he's like, the funniest thing is they kept saying that they always had a plan, but you can tell watching 1, 2, and 3, they had no plan. They did not think 1 was going to explode like it did, and then 2 and 3 are just a mess.
Yeah, no, they didn't have a plan. I mean, you could tell right off the bat by bringing Jeffrey Rush back in at the end of 2. That it was just like, okay, we're just going to copy what we had in the first one.
And The Matrix did it too, where they filmed Reloaded and Revolutions. And I find that with this, you had a good source material to build your script around. With things like The Matrix and Pirates of the Caribbean, I stand by the fact that the first movie was so good, nobody was expecting it. There was never any plans for a sequel. And then they're like, but money.
Yeah. I mean, but look, it also was what? First Pirates was 2003. The second one didn't come out until 2006. So, I mean, it wasn't a slam dunk, okay, we're filming part two right away. It took them a little while, I think, to really obviously come up with a storyline and you know, maybe get all the actors back. I don't know how that went through. We definitely need to do a retro review on those movies because that'll be interesting. We'll have a lot to say on that.
On the Pirates movies?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, I don't want to. I can't tell
you. You got to talk at least the first one.
I was about to say, because I could not tell you. I didn't see the most recent one. And then I could not tell you the plot of Stranger Tides at all.
I don't even remember which one Stranger Tides is. Is that the newest one, or is that the one with Penelope Cruz?
I think that's the one with Penelope Cruz, question mark. I never thought I'd be questioning if Penelope Cruz is in a movie.
I will stand by the last one that they did with Johnny Depp and Jeffrey Rush. I think, I can't remember which one it is. The one with Javier Bardem was actually pretty good.
And Orlando Bloom's cameo, even though they completely ruined the character of Will Turner.
Wow. And then Keira Knightley's cameo at the end, too, was nice. It was just a good, you know, finishing up of that storyline. But obviously, we're not going to get another Pirates movie, at least with Johnny Depp. And I don't think we're going to get another one at all.
I think they wanted to do that female-led one with Margot Robbie. And I'm glad that they're just...
canceled.
Thank God.
I think they canceled. So, all right, then. So, as we've told before, David Yates returned to film both Part 1 and Part 2. So, he now holds the record for most Harry Potter films directed. So he, from 5 to 8, he had, my girlfriend's cat is escaping from the living room. I didn't close the window enough.
Well done.
So yeah, that was fun.
All right. So five to eight, four movies.
Four movies. Yes. Obviously has shown enough, you know, from Order of the Phoenix on that the producers felt he was the right guy to continue on. Which, you know, is continuity wise is smart. I mean, as long as you're getting good performances out of all the actors and you know, you're feeling like the movies are coming in on budget, time, and well done, I mean, it makes sense. And to the point where he went on, he's directed all the Fantastic Beasts movies. So he's really made himself the Harry Potter director in a way, the Harry Potter world director.
Yeah. So I think, imagine if they had had two separate directors for the last two movies, for part one and part two. I don't know if it would have worked.
Oh, no, it would have been Well, we can't say what it would have been, but you could argue that it could have been the Star Wars sequel trilogy. I mean, when you have three different directors for three movies, it's tough.
Oh man, we got May coming up.
Oh, that's right.
We got Star Wars month coming up again.
Oi.
Oi.
You're going to have to watch Rise of Skywalker again.
You could not make me watch Rise of Skywalker again.
So you're just going to wing it? You're just going to be like...
Of course I'm going to wing it, because that's how they wrote the movie too. They just kind of winged it.
Winged it.
Right. I didn't know if there was... Wong it? Wonged it? Wong.
They winged it.
Wanged it. Wang, pay attention. Austin Powers reference. Right. Love it.
So, all right. Do we want to take a little break before we dive into, not the plot, but we're going to really dive into, you know, the character growth in this movie, the
favorite scenes and differences,
favorite scenes, stuff like that.
That sounds like a wonderful idea.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a flash.
Hey guys, it's Paul, and the Misfit Faction is looking for your help. We are trying to grow not only our network, but also grow our brands. And the best way to do that is if you guys are looking to start your very own podcast. Maybe you guys have been listening to us for a while. Maybe it's something you guys have always wanted to do, but you're not sure how to get started. If you go to podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys will get a month of free podcasting on set as a gift from us. So make sure if you guys are looking to start your own show, you reach out to us and go to podbean.com/misfitfaction. Also, maybe you guys have your own online business or service that you're always looking to grow, and advertising is a very big part of that. If you guys go to sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys can get $100 worth of free advertising, again, as a thank you from us to you guys. That's sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction.
And we're back, and we're going to add a little bit here, because I think this movie really, and book, we really get the three of them together in feels like an almost unwinnable situation, and we really are interested in looking at where these characters are going in terms of their, you know, just their, all three of them are going through a lot at this point, you know, and how it's gone from where we ended up at the end of Half-Blood Prince to where they are now. I mean, the movie basically begins with the three of them, you know, all, you know, kind of separate and all the three things going on in their lives. The Durses are leaving and Harry's got the house all to himself. For 14 minutes, Hermione casts a spell on her parents so they don't remember her.
Yeah.
And she leaves her home, and then Ron's obviously at the Weasley home with his family. It all begins with this Snape appearing at the Malfoy house where the Death Eaters are meeting, and he is informing Voldemort that they have found out that they are going to try and move Harry later that evening. And, I mean, tough scene to watch where they're basically torturing this Hogwarts professor who we've never met before movie-wise. I think in the book she makes more of an appearance in Half-Blood Prince in, Professor Burbage?
Something like that.
Her levitated on the table, and they're basically using the Cursio hex on her, and then obviously Voldemort kills her right in front of Snape. I mean, he shows no emotion.
I think he for a quick second you see it, and he's like, oh.
And then so he puts the curse on her to kill her, and then the snake freaking eats her. Crazy.
Yeah, I hate snakes. I'm like not a snake guy. I do not enjoy too much snakes. Like, why did it have to be snakes? I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
So, like, whenever, even if the snake is so fake, like, some of the CGI in the Harry Potter series has not held up well. The first one especially, like with the troll scene where he's got the rubber Harry. Oh my god, it's rough.
Yeah.
Though Nagini is totally fake, and I know that this snake is not real, dude, during the second movie, is it the second movie where they go to? No, it's, is it in the first one? This
no,
one?
No, it's where, in this one where they go to Godric's Hollow.
Oh yeah, I still, that scene still skeeves me.
I forgot how creepy that scene was.
It's horrifying.
Turns it into the snake.
Rips. It was worse in the book.
I believe it.
Anywho. Yeah. Keep talking. So, I'm skeevy.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. So they move Harry, and it's basically an all out, like everybody's come to help Harry, you know, get to the safe house, and they all take Polyjuice Potion to turn into Harry. It's actually a really funny scene. Hermione turns into him, Ron turns into him, Fleur turns into a home. So it's funny seeing Daniel Radcliffe kind of like have to like kind of
play different
characters. It's really, really interesting.
My issue though is with Polyjuice Potion, they've never been consistent. In Chamber of Secrets, they had them still use their voices, right? But then for Mad-Eye Moody, they didn't. Like, they had him still use his Mad-Eye Moody voice. He didn't sound like what's-his-face.
Was it in the book, maybe?
No, in the book, it turns you completely into that person, including the voice. The okay, voice thing was so a stylized thing. It was a stylized thing for this film, or for the film series. So for me, like, I also... Like, don't get me wrong, I love when Fred and George are like, wow, we're identical. And you know it's them because their voices. But, like, for me, yeah. I'm like, man, I don't know. It's just weird. Like, Polyjuice Potion's supposed to turn you completely into that person. That's, like, a weird gripe that I have. It doesn't really bother me that much, but still.
I hear you. Mm-hmm. So there's a very interesting little battle scene where everyone is fighting and they all have to, you know, separate. And we find out that Mad-Eye Moody is killed. And then, sadly, we witness the death of Hedwig.
So since we're talking about Harry and kind of his growth, this is the movie where the sacrifices for Harry's safety are really at their highest. This is where it starts.
Oh, absolutely.
And obviously you can argue that the battle of Hogwarts in the second movie is definitely just as like, hey, we're dying for, like Harry even says in the second one, he's like, I didn't want anybody to die for me. Like when he conjures the ghosts of everybody. But this is the movie where everybody's like, you're the most important thing. It's always weird to see Harry take on the Chosen One mantle because it's always so begrudgingly and it's always so like, yeah. But in this movie, he finally is like, hey, I have this mission to do, and it consumes him to the point where he's kind of terrible to a lot of people who are supposed to like, he's supposed to care about.
Yeah.
So I think that's really, and it is in the book just like that. Like, you know, he starts to get very agitated, like, and I can get the frustration. He's given this mission by Albus Dumbledore and he's got no clue what to do.
Yeah, especially, you know, obviously with the death of Mad-Eye, the death of Hedwig, you know, the Death Eaters attacking the wedding and just throwing everybody into a frenzy. The Ministry of Magic is now under the control of Voldemort, so they're basically torturing, you know, muggle-born blood, you know, wizards. I mean, it's crazy. And there's that one scene before the wedding where Harry tries to start, you know, going away, and Ron catches him and goes like, so you're just going to go? And he goes, I didn't ask for this. I didn't ask for people to die for me. I didn't ask for all this. Mm-hmm. He goes, you think it's all about you? There's more to this than you.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be fighting for this cause even if you weren't here, but you are just, it happens that you are here. You are the chosen one. You are the one that all this happened to.
Which is funny because we're talking about characters and their development. You got Ron. And yeah. Ron... This is the movie where the three of them really shine with their acting with each other, and the chemistry is just at its best.
Yeah.
You know, the scene where Ron finally does leave, and he's just, like, so ragged and miserable and just, like, just so unhappy and all that. Like, it's well done. They do a great job with it. But actually, you know, one of my favorite scenes in this movie, it always makes me laugh no matter what. Hermione's cutting Harry's hair, and she goes, oh, my God. And he panics. He's like, what? And he's like feeling his head. I don't know why. It just always makes me like, oh my God, the last thing you ever want to hear when somebody's cutting your hair or doing anything like that, or like a tattoo is, whoops.
Whoops. Oh,
it says moth, not mom. God. Worst tattoo artist ever. And then you have Hermione, who is still very much Hermione in this movie. And I think this is even peak Hermione.
Yeah. I mean, they're basically fugitives. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what the movie feels like. It's like the fugitive. They have to, you know, camp. They have to put Hermione puts the hex on where, like, their campsite is hidden from, you know, everyone else. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's months. You know, they're for a couple months where they're on the run for.
Yeah.
I don't know how about you. I don't know what you feel about this, but the fact that people actually still went to Hogwarts, like that scene where the Death Eaters attack the train and are looking for Harry, and like Neville and Ginny are on the train, and I'm just like, why are you going back to the school?
Why? I don't know. I feel like my parents would still send me to school. Magical.
Well, I mean, like, why is Ginny on the train? Like, the Weasleys are like, I mean, I
well,
guess
so in, they do a better
blood and so they feel she's not as in danger.
They do a better job in the books explaining it. So in the books, and this is one of the differences. So we'll talk about those, and we'll talk about this one for now. In the book, they take a ghoul or a troll or something like that, and they disguise it as Ron, and that he's got some sort of wizard disease, and that's why he's homesick. So yeah. That way people don't come looking for him or don't get suspicious. Like, obviously, if I think in the books, they explain it that like, if people didn't go to school, then like the Death Eaters were coming to your house to be like, well, why aren't you in school? Like, are you conspiring against us? Are you bad? Like, they do a better job in the book talking about that sort of thing. And that's why a lot of them still went to school. And a lot of them actually still consider the school to be a safer place.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So weird. I know. Again, things that were described in the book. But yeah.
But basically, they're searching for Horcruxes. I mean, that is the mission that they're going throughout this movie. They have the locket that they found, obviously, at the end of Half-Blood Prince. And at the end of the movie, they realize that it's not the real locket.
Mm-hmm.
The real locket was stolen by
Regulus Black.
Regulus Black, who we find out in this movie. And yeah, and then sure, we get Creature to come back, and he actually finds the real locket.
So that is another thing. Again, we're talking about now we're talking about differences. Stop doing this to me.
What do you want from me, man?
What do you want from me? But in the books, so Creature in the books is just as bad. Like, he's terrible in the books too. And so in the book, he gets his ownership shifts to Harry because Harry inherits everything that Sirius owns. So, including Creature. And in the books, he's just as bad to Hermione, but Hermione's much more polite to him in the books because she goes through that whole spew thing, like save all the house elves and all that stuff. But they took that out completely from the book series, or from the film series, excuse me. And it's after after a Creature helps them and Harry gives him Regulus the locket from Regulus. That's when he suddenly shifts. He's like, oh my God, like this is a gift from my former owner owned that. Like, he had such respect for the Black family that after Harry did that, he completely changed his tone and he would like clean the house. He was nicer to Hermione. He even fought in the Battle of Hogwarts with the other house elves.
Yeah.
So that is something that they took out completely from this film.
Yeah. But so basically we see that the three of them were bequest gifts from Dumbledore after his death. We have the scene where the Minister of Magic gives them the three. Harry gets the snitch. Ron gets the light.
The Deluminator.
The Deluminator that we see at the beginning of Sorcerer's Stone. And then Hermione, what does Hermione get?
She gets a copy of The Beetle and the Beetle the Bard.
Beetle and the Bard. All right.
So that, with the Deathly Hallows, obviously,
have a meaning to something, you know. And then we find out that, you know, the snitch has a hidden message on it that Harry realizes because he caught the snitch with his mouth in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So basically, I mean, we're just watching the three of them searching and searching and searching. They're separate. I mean, Ron's separated from his family, obviously. Hermione's separated from her family. The locket is also causing attitude changes, as I believe, right?
Right. So basically a Horcrux is like starts to slowly corrupt the people around it, like it happened with Ginny with the diary and all that. And there's even a rumor, like a fan theory, that because Harry was an unknowing Horcrux, that's why the Dursleys just hated him and they were just miserable because they were exposed to him all the time.
Fan theory.
That is no actual.
No, I know, but I like it. But
yeah,
like it.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, so the obviously the Horcrux is a big factor in Ron's, you know, leaving. You know, he really was becoming jealous of Hermione and Ron. I gotta say, I'm sorry, but that scene where he kind of witnesses Harry and Hermione like taunting him,
yeah,
they're like half naked and like making out.
No, they're fully naked.
They're fully. You don't see anything. You know what I mean. They're not. You don't see it, but you can tell that they're not. They're not with clothes on. But I remember when the movie came out, and then that scene happened. Everyone was like, "Why? Why are you doing this?"
Because yeah, that was a weird thing. Yeah,
that was a weird addition to that. But yeah, I mean, it works because Rod is just like, "What the hell?"
All right. So now that we've described two scenes that we don't like. Me with the Creature stuff, you with that, because I agree with that. I think that that is one of the weirdest creative choices they could have done.
Yeah.
Do you want to do favorite scenes and then some differences? We'll kind of weave them together.
You got the favorite scene. Look, you go first. Favorite
scenes for me in this one. So it's slightly different in the book, but when he stuns Umbridge and he like the Polyjuice potion's wearing off and he goes, sorry, Professor. Dolores, one mustn't tell lies. And then he just rocks her. Like that, that was so great in this movie. And obviously the whole scene of them doing the heist was a lot of fun. You know, Ron, it's me. Oh yeah, sorry. I forgot.
Yeah, I enjoyed that where they're in the different characters. The characters who we only ever met in this one movie. And you know, and it's just, it was just a little fun little scene in the Ministry of Magic. I would love to have seen more of the Ministry. I know we get to see Gringotts in the next movie with the vault and stuff like that, but really would like to see more of the Ministry of Magic. I don't know if you see it in the Fantastic Beasts movie. I can't speak for that, but I enjoyed that scene. I really liked the Godric's Hollow scene.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot how like just creepy that scene was.
It's a total tone shift.
Yeah, the graveyard, you get the what's her name is looking over them.
Bathilda Bagshot.
Bathilda Bagshot, and it turns out it's Dangini. And you know, even the scene where she's turning back into the snake is just, it's like something out of Stephen King. It was like,
it's a
dark scene, and it works. Mm-hmm. It was really good. Really good.
So for me, then another scene, this movie has a lot of good comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So there. I've already mentioned the haircut thing that always makes me chuckle. There are two other scenes that make me laugh. One is, and they're both, I don't think they're in the book, but Ron gives Harry a new wand because his breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to like practice it, and he's like, Confringo, and then like this huge explosion. He's like, ah, and they're both like, ah. That scene always gets me. And then it's slightly different in the books, but when Harry and Ginny kiss in this book, and then I think it's George who kind of sneaks by and he's doing stuff in the background, and then he's like, morning. In the book, it was, I think, Ron who caught them and he got pissed.
Oh, God.
He gets pissed because he's like, you're leading my sister on. And he's like, you said in the last book, and he didn't say it like that, that you wanted to protect her by not being with her, and now you're going to be snogging her, jerk.
It is a jerk thing to do.
You got another favorite scene before we do some differences?
Oh, another favorite scene. I do like the ending scene at the Malfoy house where they kind of have it all out with Bellatrix and Draco. And, Lucius is just can't do anything right.
Mm-hmm.
Dobby comes to the rescue and sadly doesn't make it.
R.I.P. Dobby.
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk some differences?
Sure, go for it.
All right. I have a fair amount, so I'll just kind of run through them. Just the biggest ones, right? So after the Malfoy Manor scene in the beginning, Hermione is just, she's seen with her parents and Ron at the Burrow. There's no scene, they don't show that in the actual, like that's not a scene in the book where she erases her parents' memories.
Mm-hmm.
It was filmed for this, which is fine. Let's see. They don't really talk too much about the newspaper article, The Lives and Lies of Albus Dumbledore. We learn a lot more about all that stuff afterwards. They just introduced the mirror from Sirius in this movie with no explanation about it. Like in the previous book, like you find out at the end that Sirius had given it to him for Christmas and it was a way to talk to him. And it's all like, oh, that sucks because I could have just done that. In the book, you have Theodius Diggle and Hestia Jones. I don't know if those are members of the Order of the Phoenix were the ones who took the Dursleys away to safety.
Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's see. The Seven Potters thing is a little bit different. In the film, they're all going to the Burrow. Like, that's all where they're going. In the book, they all have different places to go. And then they take a port key to the Burrow. So it's slightly different in that. And in the book, Hedwig is still in the cage. Like, she doesn't sacrifice herself for Harry like she does in this.
All right. I think that was a cinematic thing, and I liked it. It was definitely good.
So... And then Harry uses Expelliarmus on one of the Death Eaters, and that's how they figure out that he's... And that's like a whole conversation in the actual book, where he's like, well, you keep disarming people instead of like hurting them. Like, you gotta toughen up your spells. And he's like, that's just what I do. And that's how Voldemort finds out who he is, that he's the real Harry Potter. And then the wand thing is slightly different, where it does the gold sparks instead in the book. But in this one, Voldemort's using Malfoy's wand, and it just snaps. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. George's ear gets completely removed in the book, and it's just kind of mangled in this one. I mentioned that Ron has a ghoul in the pajamas, where it explains where he is. They don't say anything about Harry's 17th birthday, mentioned that George is the one that walks in on them snogging. And it's different between Scrimgeour and Harry in the will reading, where they actually like start fighting over the sword. But in this one, it's like way more calm. In the wedding, see, this is a big difference. I'm kind of surprised they did it. They disguised Harry in the book. They gave him like a polyjuice potion, and he was Barney Weasley was like he was a cousin of the Weasleys.
I remember that. You're right. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, like, so slightly different. I mentioned the creature stuff and how he kind of turns around. So this is a big one, and I'm really upset that they took out so much of the Lupin and Tonks stuff.
Oh, yeah. We've already discussed how those two just really kind of...
Because in this one, Lupin tries to abandon Tonks and she's pregnant. And he was like, I'm going to come help you guys. Like, I'm the cool, you know, let's do this. I'm your friend. And Harry calls him a coward. And they actually, I think they even physically fight for a second and he disappears. And then Lupin realizes he's like, I was just kind of running away from my stuff. Victor Crumb was supposed to be at the wedding. And in the book, he is.
Okay.
Something that they added, and I think works better for this, is Harry and Hermione, the little dance scene that they have. I think that actually really works for...
That was good. I think that helped with the kind of the breakup, obviously, the monotony of just them going on the run. And there was just, you needed to put something else in there to really kind of mellow the characters out. Like, they're going through so much. I mean, you know, and I think... I don't know if Harry realizes how much Hermione and Ron are going through is just as much as he is.
I mean,
it's crazy.
Wormtail dies in the book.
That's right.
So Harry and the, like, he's trying to stop Harry and Ron from escaping, and Harry reminds him that he owes him a life debt. Like, he saved his life from Lupin and Black.
Yeah.
So he hesitates, and the Silver Hand turns on him and kills him. Like, they try and help him too. Like, they try pulling it off, but the Silver Hand that Voldemort gives him kills him.
Yeah, and then this one, he just pretty much just gets, like, knocked out.
Yeah, Dobby knocks him out.
And I can't remember if he even appears in the second part.
Nothing.
No? Wow. Interesting.
I did really like how they showed the Deathly Hallows book, like how they did that stylistic thing.
I was actually going to bring that up. I was wondering what you felt about that, how it was kind of animation-esque.
For the movie, I think it works.
Okay, interesting.
They do a level of that in Hogwarts Legacy, where you go into the Beetle and the Bard book, kind of, and like the aesthetic changes to match it. It's really cool.
Nice.
Mild
and I
spoiler.
Do like the and then obviously the mention of, why am I blanking on his name again? Grindelwald.
Batman. Oh, Grindelwald.
Grindelwald.
He doesn't look like Johnny Depp or Matt Mickelson. He
or
looks
Colin
like the
Farrell.
He looks like the guy from Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. So I forget his name, but he's like one of those actors that they tried to make really
Stranger
big.
Stranger Things.
That's right. Now he's finally getting his due. I like it.
So. Yeah, I didn't realize there were that many differences. I thought there'd be a lot more, you know, similarities between the book and this movie, but, you know. So, again, still there's some stuff they just, you know, you gotta, like, cut for time and then...
It happens.
You know, adapt for cinematic views instead of literary. I mean, it's sometimes stuff in books just can't really adapt to the screen.
Yeah, it's tough. You gotta find the right balance. Unfortunately, sometimes that means cutting things or just kind of changing them around.
Alrighty then. So you want to do a Star City rating?
I give this one 4.
I'm going to agree with you. I was going to say 4 myself. I thought this one was solid. Obviously, it's, you know, there's a second part. Like, it is kind of like watching Infinity War. It's like the story's not over, but as a movie, kept you going, and it makes you want to see the second part so much that you can't wait. I think it was like 6 months, maybe a little.
Oh
more
God, it was rough.
The second one came out. So yeah, I agree. This one really hit the nail on the coffin in terms of, you know, leaving us in a way where it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, that shot of...
Now it's coming.
The shot of Voldemort with the Elder Wand. Awesome.
Oh, that was great.
Great shot.
That was great.
You want to do a Fan Feedback Friday? I got it ready.
Yeah, go for it, sir.
All right, this week, if you could cross the Harry Potter franchise with any other franchise, what would it be? We got some good ones. We got Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Supernatural, Constantine... I like that one. The Fast and the Furious. Sorry, just kind of giggling. And
Harry, we're family.
Harry, it's okay. We're your family now. That's what our friend Mike said. And Lord of the Rings. Solid choices.
I was thinking myself, I was going to go like Ghostbusters.
That'd be fun. That'd be really interesting, actually.
It would make no sense, but I couldn't think of another, you know, franchise to really kind of pair them with. It would be interesting.
Yeah, I can get behind that. I can get behind that. But yeah, if you guys want to participate in Fan Feedback Friday, it's super easy. All you have to do is go to Facebook, type in the Cinematic Adventures Podcast, and every Friday between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, we post our Fan Feedback Friday. You can answer it there. We'll read it live on the air when we record. If you guys are looking for more content, you can go to our website, themisfitfaction.com. We have links to all of our shows, not only this one, but also the Multiverse Fancast and MF Uncensored, as well as news, reviews, articles, and of course, our merch store. And you can find us on all the social media like Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and whatever else you use. Just type in The Misfit Faction, and odds are you'll find some of our stuff.
Yeah, definitely catch our previous episode of Multiverse Fancast. I joined Paul on that episode, and we discussed Everything Everywhere All at Once. It was a good time. So
God, my brain still hurts.
Checking that out.
My brain still hurts.
Your brain still hurts.
It's been 24 hours, and I'm still like reeling.
All right, I'm gonna let you rest.
So, oh, thanks, man.
All right, so this has been fun, and we're looking forward to obviously finishing up our Harry Potter reviews with Deathly Hallows Part 2 next week. As always, I'm one of your hosts. I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
And we hope everyone out there has a great rest of their day.
Or don't. We're not your boss.
That's true.
Bye.